Hi, this is Joanne Ekton, and welcome to Mojo Solutions. This is the podcast where you learn from successful people some of the timeless tips of how to get more out of your life and feed your mojo. Today's special guest is Valerie J. Lewis-Coleman, and she's going to share with us some of the lessons that she learned in her transition from a 26-year engineer in the automotive industry to an entrepreneur in the publishing industry. And her story is a great one to hear, so let's introduce Ms. Valerie J. Lewis-Coleman.
Valerie, thank you for joining us today. I'm very happy to have you and have you come share your story with us. And when you first approached me, you started with a title that said, How I Survived the Demise of Dayton's Automotive Industry. So I guess you weren't always a best-selling author or an award-winning publisher or a motivational speaker. So I'm very excited to hear your story, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'd like to actually, like I said, hear your story. Let's talk about what you were doing. What is this demise of the Dayton's automotive industry? So talk to me about what you were doing and your journey to becoming this award-winning author.
Well, I started out at General Motors right out of high school as a co-op education student. And I worked at the same facility, although we went through numerous transitions and company buyouts and ended up being Delphi Automotive Systems. But I was there for 26 years. And in 2007, after a 26-year career, saving the company millions of dollars, senior industrial engineer, my particular plant was closed along with about seven other plants in the Dayton area. And so my job was gone.
Oh, boy. And I'm sure that was a blow to the family.
It was. My income represented 65% of our household income. So I was a breadwinner between my husband and I. And it was definitely, I don't know if I can so much say I was scared because I knew I had options. I could always go and find another job. It may have meant, you know, relocating to another city because Delphi was at that point flooded with engineers. Not only was our plant, you know, having adjustments, but other Delphi GM plants, as well as other companies in the city as a whole. So the market was flooded. I wasn't really interested in relocating. My family was here, my friends, and my church home is here. So I wasn't really interested in relocating.
What did you do? What was the first step that you did? If you weren't, I mean, trained as an engineer after 26 years, it sounds like you made a complete shift in direction. So tell me what your thoughts were and what your first step was.
Well, prior to Delphi actually closing, you know, it's like it wasn't something that just happened overnight. You know, if you were paying attention to the signs, watching how we went from a two buildings, one which was 2.2 million square feet, down to one building which was 300,000 square feet, and the manpower decreasing, and, you know, even the whole economic threat nationally, it wasn't tough to see that something was going to happen. So I had actually started teaching math at a community college, St. Clair Community College, in 1995. So I kind of had that as something to fall back on. But in about 2004, I started working in the book business on my own. Prior to that time, I was working with several other authors, but at that point, I decided to launch out on my own. And so I kind of had some preparation before the plant actually closed. I had already finished one book and had started on my second book and used the opportunity, you know, a lot of my engineering skills I've used to help other authors make money and save thousands of dollars. So it was kind of like, even though I wasn't planning to be a book publisher, my training, my education and my skill set as an engineer helped me transition into the book business, not only be successful as far as my writing, but then also to be able to do it at an economical price, put out a quality product, and then do the same by teaching others.
It normally puts the two together of engineering and book business.
Well, and the reason being is because if you think about authors, most authors are introverts and most authors are more creative. They work, I believe it's the right side of their brain. Mm-hmm. Or left side, I can't remember which hemisphere.
I don't get them right either.
they basically focus on that side. You know, that's where that's all the creativity, the abstract, you know, the free for all, and just, you know, they just, where I am more the business side of it. I can do both, but I also write as well. But I'm also more business-minded. So what I was able to do is help those authors who are the introverts, who don't understand the business, who just want to write and not really do anything more with it, help them to learn the business side of it so that they can be more effective in what they were doing. What I found, Joanne, was that a lot of people were spending thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars more than they needed to spend to get their books published because they didn't know any better. So they would just freely, okay, just, you know, you go on Google and you type in publishing or self-publishing, and, there are a lot of companies that jump up at the top of the list, and those are the ones, for the most part, that most people are utilizing to publish their books, and then finding out, well, they weren't necessarily the best option. But, you know, human nature, we go with the path of least resistance, and they're picking what pops up on the first couple pages.
No, but you didn't start this way, right? You started as writing your own books while you were still working, and then, like you said, teaching math. So at what point did you start to help others with their publishing? Was that right away, or was that further down in your career?
Well, I actually was helping others before I wrote my own book. I had a friend who, she approached me in maybe 97, 98. And wanted me to review her book and give her my feedback. So when I read the manuscript, I was like, yeah, it's pretty good, but this was predictable. This character's flat. I saw that coming, you know. And as a result of my feedback, she's like, you would make a great editor. I'm like, I am not interested in editing. English has never been my thing. I prefer math. That's just not me. Well, almost 7 or 8 years later, when she finally published her first book, she brought me on board to help her with the business side of it. And traveling with her, really teaching her even a lot of the basics and fundamentals of business, I realized that a lot of other authors were making some of the same mistakes and even worse mistakes. Like one young lady I came across, she spent $150 to file her copyright. Well, back then it only cost $30. She didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't it like $35 now or something like that?
It's $35 now. Yeah, it's not very expensive, but she spent $150. So she went through a print-on-demand company, and they charged her a 500% markup. Well, see, that's how my math and my engineering comes into play. Just at Delphi, it was my job to figure out how to do it better, faster, smarter, quicker, easier, cheaper, but still put out a quality product in a timely manner. So I transitioned that skill set into the book business, and one particular client, she went with the first printer that she found. Well, when I came on board, I was like, okay, let's shop around. There are other printers, I'm sure. Went online, did some research. I now have maybe 250 printers across the world. And whenever I go for a book printing job, I send out a quote. Well, now they know they're bidding against each other. So I'll get bids and they have a price spread as much as $3,500, $4,000 difference for the same project.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. So if you're new to the business and you don't know anybody, you go up the first one, you may spend $5,000 for 500 books. I'm going to spend $1,000 or less.
And that's what makes you so popular now, to help other people.
Yes. Help other people
wonderful.
Save money.
That's wonderful. I want to kind of pull back here and talk a little about your transition, because you went from 26 years of being an engineer and working in a corporate job, and then now you are 100% working for yourself. And it sounds like you did a lot of steps in parallel. But did you get to a point, though, where you felt like the bottom had dropped out, where your job went away, and like you said, 65% of your income went away? And did that raise your fear level and make you really reassess what it is that you needed to do with your life?
Joanne, I say probably once every month or so, every couple months, I'm like, oh, man, maybe I should go back to work. I have to be honest, because it is, you know, I had a very comfortable $75,000 for one person, you know, earning is well above the national average. So I didn't have a want for anything. If I wanted to go on a trip, I went on a trip. If I wanted to go buy something, I went and bought it. You know, whatever I wanted to do, I did it, because we had discretionary income.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when $75,000 is gone a year, you know, $6,000 $6,500 a month, that's a big chunk. So some of the liberties were, are now few and far between. And it's not so much just the money. You know, we as women, we want to feel secure. So it's the mm-hmm. security. I don't like the fear of, do I have enough to pay the mortgage this year? You know, or this month? Or, you know, oh, I hope the AC doesn't go out because we don't have a, you know, cash reserve to go and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those kind of things that kind of trigger every now and then, man, I should go back to work. But then I realized that what I'm doing is not just for me. I get a lot of reward out of helping other people achieve their dreams and reach their goals, because a lot of people want to write a book. Many of them don't know how to write a book. They don't know how to publish a book. And then they definitely don't know how to publish it so that it's cost effective.
Right.
So that they can make money, you know, yeah, turn a profit on the first print. Most people can't turn a profit on the first print run.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, to someone who doesn't know the industry, that it would just be, I mean, to me, right, it just seems like mm-hmm. One of those impossible dreams. Writing the book is just the first step, right? It's getting it published,
yeah,
making money off of it that are huge. So the reward from helping others, basically the those intrinsic rewards that you're getting from doing that kind of work, is what holds you back from going out and getting another job.
That holds me back. And also, you know, I don't like corporate life. I don't like it.
Why? Why is it different?
Well,
tell me how it's different.
I don't like corporate. And I work in a factory for one, so, you know, it's not the nice office setting. And then we had a very strong union. I'm in a male-dominated field, and I didn't mind that so much because of, you know, the way I process information, I process more like a man. So I didn't mind that aspect of it. But what I didn't like was oftentimes, you know, men trying to take the alpha dog role and discount my contribution or overlook, you know, me being there. Well, I wasn't that one. They chose the wrong one, because I would tell them in a minute, I know you see me here, and you know that was my idea, you know. Or just a bureaucracy, having to be there 8 to 5. Well, when I left Delphi, my last job, I had to be at work at sometime at 4 a.m. and may not leave until 6 p.m.
Oh, gosh.
You know, oh, it was awful. And so, I went from having the best boss ever in the engineering position that I had to the worst boss ever, where I was working in what we call material controller or logistics, you know, material movement. And so I went from the best boss ever to the worst boss ever. And then, you know, stressful job, crazy hours, no training. You know, so by the time I got to that point, I was like, okay, I am ready to go. It was just too much. If I wanted to take a vacation, you have to ask permission. It's like, did you see Shawshank Redemption? Where Morgan Freeman says, can I go to the restroom ball? Can I go to the restroom ball? He's like, you can go, you don't have to ask. Well, at times, Not that we had that kind of strictness at my particular facility, but, you know, I have to ask permission to do things. I want to take off work, I have to ask permission. You know, I have a doctor's appointment, I have to ask permission. I want to go on vacation, I have to make sure that I can do that. And I'm not a free spirit, but I like to be able to do what I want when I want. So something else that really keeps me tied to being an entrepreneur is I control my destiny. My results are up to me. I don't have to wait on Sally, Sue, or Johnny to get the job done. I don't have to wait on them to worry about them throwing me under the bus. You know, whatever I get, it's because of my efforts and my efforts alone. So that in and of itself is rewarding.
And I get and agree with a lot of what you said, because I've been in the corporate world and I understand what it is that you're saying, but I don't want to paint any rosy picture, though, that being your own boss or being an entrepreneur means you don't work hard. You're still working hard. You're still working
harder.
Harder.
I work harder. I do, because, you know, the thing about corporate, at least my job as an engineer, I had it down to a science.
Mm-hmm.
And so, engineering down to a science, huh, fun. But I had it down, so, you know, if I needed to get something done, if the boss needed something, boom, knocked out the report. So even though I may be there 8 or 10 hours a day, literally me actually working and putting in time, I might have only had to put in 4 or 5 hours worth of work. So it wasn't like I was, you know, just stressful and cranking, at least until, like, you know, before that to the final position. It wasn't so much so because I had mastered my job.
Mm-hmm.
But now as an entrepreneur, there's always something to do. You know, and especially as an author, I'm an author, I'm a publisher, I'm a motivational speaker, and right now I have an intern who is working with me to help me with the marketing aspect of it. But prior to her being on board, it's really me doing everything. So I'm writing my book, I'm publishing my books, I'm marketing my books, and then I'm publishing books for other clients. I have 20 other books I've published. I've got clients from London to Africa and, of course, United States. And so all that is me. It's a very labor-intensive type thing. So, like, I don't get sick days. If I'm sick, I can't produce. So sick is not an option. Now, at work, I would take a well day. I don't feel like coming in today. I'm not coming in, and I'm still going to get paid. That's not an option as an entrepreneur. You know, and then the hours are long. I mean, when I first launched out on a full-time basis, I literally couldn't sleep from the anxiety of thinking all that I had to do. So I may get up at 6 in the morning and then not go to bed until 2 o'clock the next morning. Oftentimes forgetting to eat. My husband would have to say, hey, did you eat yet? Oh, yeah, no. You know, because you get so consumed and it can be overwhelming. That's why it's important to have a plan and a focus, you know, and some direction. And I have to be honest, there were times when I kind of wandered, you know, let me do this, let me try that, let me, you know, dabbling into a little bit of everything. Because of the fear of not having money, so anything that looked like it would present money, I would jump on it.
Gotcha. So, well, talk about how do you tackle it now? You said there was a time, so it sounds like you've solved that. So what's your system now? How do you keep yourself focused?
Well, I have several things I've put in place. I have, for one, I have, Bob Proctor, who is a self-made millionaire. He has a mentorship program. So I'm a part of that. And that is really helping me to stay focused, you know, where, communicate daily through videos, a social networking where you have people you can talk with. That really helps me to stay focused. You know, he has like little, examples and exercises to do every day. Ways to like change your thinking. And then I have another mentor, Mo Siegel, who has been giving me a lot of direction, even on branding. One of the things I was doing was that's really helped me gain focus is I've kind of separated my book business from me as a person, as a motivational speaker, as an expert. It was all like blurred together. And so now I've created two distinct entities and two separate websites with, you know, really two different purposes. Now they kind of overlap because they both, you know, I'm an expert on the subject matters of my book where I conduct workshops and keynotes, etc. But then the book business is something very different because now I publish other people's books. I do conferences and workshops and training specifically on writing and publishing. So I was able to split the two out, and that really helped me, surprisingly, to get, you know, get my mind straight as to what I want to do and what my focus is.
But it's still just you, right, with the intern that you mentioned earlier?
Yes, it's still just me. What I've done, some things I've done to really help as well is, in the publishing process, I used to also edit. And editing is probably the most time-consuming part because a lot of people may have a story to tell. Few know how to tell it well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spend mountains of time just trying to edit and get a manuscript industry ready. And so what I've done is taken that part of the process out and contracted that made that referred my clients to go to some of the other editors, people who are professionals. And that's all they do is edit. So now I've separated that part of my business and kind of like delegated that out to someone else. So that frees up my time, frees up my ability to now I can work on multiple tasks. Because when I'm editing is all I can do.
So you've learned to streamline the part of your business that makes you
most
money.
So yes, that was the most That was the most time consuming. Editing was the most time consuming and the least profitable.
Do you set yourself goals for your business or keep a list of the projects you're working on and the tasks that you need to do? I mean, or do you keep a lot of that in your head?
Well, and I had been keeping it in my head, and now I'm beginning to transition it and put it onto paper.
Gotcha.
Because that really makes a big difference. It makes it easier. For one, it frees my brain up to not be muddled about, you know, forgetting what I need to do and how I need to do it. And for two, it's something that I can go back and review, you know, on a regular basis and say, okay, yeah, I meant to do that, or I forgot to do that, or that was good, I need to follow up with that again. So it just kind of helps me stay on track and stay focused. I can't say that I have everything out of my head yet and onto paper because new things pop up all the time. But I carry a little booklet with me now, and I'll jot things down. And then I'm free. I'm free to, you know, go to the next thing. Then I'll go back to the booklet every now and then. Yeah.
I've heard that's one of the best things to do so that you're not getting woken up in the middle of the night with worrying about something you forgot to do or something you forgot to write down. When you write it down, now it's real, right? And you don't have to worry about it so much.
I don't have to worry about it so much. And, you know, I can now... I'm free because I'm not worrying. My mind is clear to either come up with more ideas or focus on whatever it is I'm trying to focus on.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's just some of the habits that help get things done that don't necessarily learn as being an employee in a corporation, right, of just the personal work habits to be able to juggle. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's just you running a business, you're everything, right? You're the marketer,
right.
The accountant, you're everybody.
Right.
Being able to keep track of all of that is a whole lot of work.
A lot of work.
And your expertise in book publishing is in actual physical books. Are you also working with Kindles and Nooks and that sort of thing as well, the e-books?
Yes, I do. I do the e-books as well. And for myself, I'm actually working on I'll probably do some audiobooks on a couple of my titles soon. That's not a service I'll offer to my clients. But I'll be putting a couple of my books on as audiobooks.
Seems like that's where a lot of things go now. I know I do a lot of my reading now is electronic rather than carrying books around. So that seems to be the way of the future.
Yeah, and it's for a self-published author, it just really makes sense because it's less expensive to publish. You don't have the printing cost.
So we'll look forward to hearing your expertise on that as well.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I love to talk about the publishing. I think I get more excited about that than I think I do anything else.
Yeah, I can hear it when you're talking about it. That's wonderful. So I think when you left, you know, we talk about when you left your job, you had some plans or you had some things you'd already started, but how well defined were they? You know, did you sit down and write yourself out a business plan and say, this is what I'm going to do and here's how I'm going to market it and actually come up with a well-defined business plan, or were you more of the model of let's get out there and do it and react to how the market's feedback?
I definitely did not have a written business plan that was totally in my head. And my objective actually initially was to be a step family expert and go into churches and help churches either launch the step family ministries or help those people who are involved in step families, you know, because one out of every two people at some point in time is going to be involved in a step family. And, you know, there's just not a lot of resources other than books, you know, but as far as people going out and speaking and teaching and, you know, having that tangible, can I ask you questions type person, there's not a lot of that available. So that was initially my focus on getting out. And when I was leaving Delphi, that's what I was going to do. I already finished my first book, which was on step families, Blended Families and Anthology, and it was already doing quite well. So that was like the catalyst for me wanting to do that. Well, once, before I even left Delphi, I got contacted by some music artists who wanted me to work with them because they knew about my business background. So I spent really the first three years out of Delphi focusing on them and what they wanted instead of what I had a plan to do, which was get started helping set families. So that kind of took me off track, and I think a part of that is because I didn't have it in writing. I wasn't confident in the plan. And as a result, when something I felt better came along, I shifted my focus.
Now, do you regret that, or have you gone back then to looking at being the step family expert, or have you changed direction from that completely?
I don't say I regret it because I learned a lot in the process, and even then I was able to help them and a lot of other music artists. But I made some good connections that have transitioned into opportunities for me as an expert in step families. So, you know, it has some benefits. But I don't regret it, but I will say that I could be a lot further along had I stayed focused. Because I've really only started focusing on me as a expert since about December. And just from that 9-month time, the business is really grown in leaps and bounds in just that little short amount of time. So I can only imagine, had I taken that first 2.5-3 years and focused on the things I'm focusing on now, how much further along I would be.
But it sounds like you didn't have the confidence necessarily then that you have now either.
Right. So well, what I've learned about myself in all of this process, you know, I think entrepreneurism really helps you, or at least you will come to some point of introspection. And what I found is that I have always been a person to not so much want to be out there in front, but to want to help other people, to be the cheerleader. You can do it. You can do it. Whatever I need, whatever you need, I can do. I'll help you. You know, if I can assist you in any way, let me know, and I'll do it for you. Rah, 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 sis, boom, bah. That's me.
Okay.
And so I was always giving and giving and giving to other people, pushing them forward to do whatever it was they wanted to do. And I think part of it was out of fear that I didn't completely know everything I needed to do for me. So instead of me stepping out there, the whole analysis paralysis syndrome, instead of me stepping out there and doing something and possibly making a mistake, that's a big fear of mine, something big, and I've learned in this journey, is that I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to do it wrong, you know, so instead of doing it wrong or appearing to be stupid or unintelligent or whatever terminology, I will not do anything until I feel I have all the information to make a decision.
But you still run the risk of making a mistake, right? You can't do something new. No matter how much you study it, you know that people make mistakes, and it's just how you learn mistakes that help you.
Right. Exactly. And I've grown to know that because, you know, that's, I think for me, that's something that you don't necessarily experience as much, at least I didn't in corporate arena. You know, I knew exactly what they wanted. They had guidelines and they had set expectations, and there was the performance agreement. You know, there were, you know, regular meetings with the boss, you know, so I knew what the expectations were and I knew I was capable of fulfilling them. Then they had the resources available to me, you know, so anything I needed to get the job done was available. If I needed more training, they provided the training, you know. If I needed a certain type of software package, they got the software, you know, whatever was needed was available. But when you're an entrepreneur, not only do you have to know how to do it, sometimes you have to find the resources to get it done.
Well, that's true. And even though you work for yourself and primarily by yourself, you've been smart enough to go reach out and find some mentoring programs and some partnerships where you have other people that you can reach out to for help. So that's key, is building that team, and it just takes time to do that.
Yeah, and I have accountability partners. I have accountability partners who, you know, what are you doing? Are you on track? What are you supposed to be doing? Is that really what you want to do? Is that part of it, you know? So that always helps to have someone who can, you know, help me stay on track, but then also hold me accountable if I get off track.
Yeah, and that's not something that I would have ever learned to do in a corporate environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that it's a whole new world in entrepreneurial spaces to get that kind of accountability partner.
Right. And it has to be someone, you know, not just someone whom you trust, but someone who is not necessarily more knowledgeable than you in the business, but they have to at least understand your vision,
right,
you know, to help you stay on track.
So now this accountability partner isn't necessarily a mentor or a coach so much as someone who is just holding you to what you said you were
right.
Doing, right?
You know, and even I think one thing that really helps you is accountability or as an entrepreneur is, you know, at Delphi told me what I was worth because that's what they paid me.
Yes,
as an entrepreneur,
yes.
I don't really know my worth. But with my friends and my accountability partners, they have helped me to find value in what I do, but to be able to put a value on it. Because I know what I do is valuable, but how do I assess a fee for that? I had a hard time with that.
Right.
And a couple of them really helped me, you know, well, you're worth $2,500. I am? You are. Just to talk for an hour and a half? Oh, my gosh, yes. Are you serious? You know, and so just the affirmation, not so much accountability, but the affirmation that what you offer is worth $2,000 or $5,000 or whatever, like my, the same as Dr. Townsend. I was telling her about something else I'm working on. She said, hold the presses. What are you charging for that? I said, well, I'll tell you right now, you need to charge $5,000, $10,000. I'm like, for real? Yeah, at a minimum.
See, that's great. That's phenomenal that she's down
enough
in the details in your business to give you some concrete advice like that.
Right. And it's such a, it's an affirmation. And I think for a lot of, I can't speak for a lot of business owners, but I know for me, it really, I'm a words of affirmation kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
So I need the encouragement. I need the cheering. That's why I give the encouragement and the cheering and the you can do it, because I need that back. So when I get that affirmation, it just does a whole something on the inside that elevates my confidence to a new level.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all like that. Whether you admit it or not, we're all like that.
Right. Right.
There's so much negativity, and everybody thinks so many negative thoughts of especially mm-hmm. about themselves, that to have mm-hmm. those positive words and the affirmation makes a big difference.
Yeah, very big. And then it boosts, I mean, it gives me more energy. It gives me more drive. Now I'm motivated. Okay, now I can stay up until 3 this morning. I don't have to go to bed at 2.
I'm listening to you talk. I'm thinking you're a motivated lady without any help.
Right. But you know what? What I'm doing now, and I'm even having to get more focused with my motivation, because I can be up until 3 in the morning, but am I being effective? Am I busy working, or am I just working busy?
Yeah. And you know, you hear about the difference between working on your business or working in your business, right?
Yeah.
You're smart about what you're spending your time on.
Exactly. Efficiency and effectiveness.
So let me ask you, though, if you were to give advice to someone who's just starting out and just considering starting their own business, what kind of advice would you give them?
The first thing I would say is, whatever business you're getting into, learn the business. Understand the business. You know, if it's books or, you know, whatever it is you're getting into, research the industry. Maybe join some of the membership affiliations that are out there, you know, so you can get into a network of people. But find out what's the competition doing. You know, what's a going fair price if you're providing some type of product or service? What's the market price for that? And where do you fall in? What's going to set you apart from the industry? Unless you're coming up with something totally brand new and unique, what's going to make your, you know, whatever you're offering, your product offering, different from the next person?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, really understand what it is you're getting into and cost. What is it going to cost you? And what is your potential earning, your earning potential? Then I think it's also important to have some money in savings. You know, be prepared to have some dry period. It's not going to jump right out, you know, and you start making millions and hundreds of thousands or, you know, right away. It's a build-up process. So, you know, have some money in savings that you can, fall back on. And then I think it's more than another important factor is to have a support network, you know, and it, whether that's your attorney, your accountant, you know, your bookkeeping record, your publicist assistant or whatever, but then also your cheering squad. And that one person who's not going to be that one that just tells you yes just because you're cute.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have someone who can tell you no when you're wrong and stand up to you, you know, when you're not willing to back down. That accountability person who, you know, you can't have a shy, timid accountability person. There has to be someone who sees where you're going, but then is also willing to stand up to you when you've gone off track.
Yeah, that is such great advice. Everything you just listed is wonderful advice. Now, don't you wish that someone had told that to you back when you first started?
Yes, most definitely. I wish I had had mentors, you know, right off the bat. The mentors that make so much difference, to have someone who's already where you're trying to be,
mm-hmm.
to guide you along the way. You know, like they say, a wise man makes his own mistakes. I mean, a wise man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from the mistakes of others.
Yeah.
So when you have someone there who's guiding you to keep you from making the type of mistakes they made, even though you still have that journey, the journey can be a little less taxing, a little less complicated. You know, a little less two steps forward and one step back if you are, you know, following the way. I'd rather just keep taking one step forward and staying at a steady pace than two steps forward, one step back. Because that can be discouraging, disheartening.
Yep. So what would you do differently if you were starting over?
If I were starting over, listening to my story now, for one, I would choose one thing and stay focused on that one thing. I started out doing some of everything, music, and I was just everywhere trying to just, because I was so afraid of not having enough money to pay my mortgage, I was jumping on anything that came along.
Mm-hmm.
So pick that thing and stay focused on it. And don't, I'm not saying be so rigid that you can't consider things that maybe are in line with that, but you don't want to have you know, 20 different things going on and they're not interconnected and they're, you know, taking your time and depleting your resources. So you want to, you know.
Yeah, there's that whole concept of getting overwhelmed because there's so many things to do, and it's okay if you're doing it all to move yourself forward, but when you've got your fingers in so many pies, you end up really not moving forward on any of them. So.
Right.
Well, I've learned so much just listening to you. It's obvious that you've earned your way through and fought your way through getting yourself established as this expert. I know that you are a best-selling author. I think what you've got, how many books out now?
I have 3 books out right now. I'm working on my 4th book, which is Self-Publishing Made Easy. I've been in this 10 years, and I'm just now writing a book about the publishing business.
Okay.
And, yeah, and that's scheduled to be out in December. My 1st book is Blended Families, an Anthology, which deals with step families. My 2nd book was Tainted Mirror, an Anthology, which deals with overcoming things that keep you from moving forward in life. Something someone said or someone did or your own thinking. I teach writing and publishing to inmates and high school students. So that book was created out of a request for them to be published authors. And it's a very powerful book. And then my 3rd book, which is my 1st novel, The Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box, is a book of empowerment for women to help us understand men. So all my books, my books are entertaining, but I don't write for the purpose of entertaining. I write for the intent to inspire, encourage, motivate, equip people to do and be greater. So all my books are about inspiring people to, you know, either survive in their step families or do whatever it is you want to do in life. You can do it if you just, you know, move past what you think about yourself. And then with relationships, you can have a fulfilling relationship if you understand the dynamics of relationships. And now the book I'm doing for authors and writers.
Wow, and you're just getting started. That's just wonderful. That's absolutely fantastic. I really, Valerie, would love to thank you for being on the show with me today and for sharing all of your wisdom and your experiences with us. So any last comments you want to make before we wrap up here?
Well, Joanne, I just want to thank you for the opportunity. And for your listeners, I want to tell them, just dream big. Whatever it is you want to do, you can do it. You just have to place it in your mind and then focus on that intent until you become emotionally connected to it. And once you emotionally connect to it, you'll begin to act, even subconsciously, unaware. You'll act in such a way that you will draw the resources to you. You will motivate and encourage yourself to be able to bring that thing into fruition. But you have to first believe that you can do it. Get the idea and believe that you can do it.
We've been talking with Valerie J. Lewis-Coleman, a best-selling author, a publisher, and a speaker. She's had incredible words of inspiration to share with all of us. And please go visit her on the website at valeriejlcoleman.com and look for her upcoming book due out in December to teach you all about publishing. And again, come visit us on our website at lifechoiceexpert.com, where we'll share these and other tips on how to be successful and get more out of life at, again, lifechoiceexpert.com. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.